A few years ago, Discovery Channel aired a documentarian's foray into the validity of a single photograph, one in which it was claimed that sometime during the morning of April 15th, 1865, photographer Henry Ulke and his brother Julius were granted access to an expired president's body and took a single ambrotype, potentially leveraging a copy of that picture as a bribe to the man guarding the bedroom, George Valentine Rutherford. I found the documentary to be fascinating to a fault, but this is, of course, Lincoln we're talking about, and if you know me, I can't get enough of Lincoln. Equally fascinating to me, however, is the nature of the reaction of skeptics. And I'm going to talk about a little bit of both of these in an unusually shorter episode on box number 7. So this documentary in question, or in discussion, is called Undiscovered, The Lost Lincoln. It aired a few years ago on Discovery Channel, and it is still visible on Discovery Plus if you have that service. And I recommend, if you haven't seen it, watch it. It's not too terribly long, and it's, at a minimum, a great journey. And in my opinion, a lot more satisfying than a majority of the Josh Gates documentarian structural frameworks that almost end always, nearly always, with empty calories and severe disappointment, no matter how fun the journey was. This at least has a little bit of meat on it at the end, at least if you're me. But again, I'm me. So it all centers around this alleged photograph taken of Lincoln after he had passed away. He passed away around 7:22 in the morning on April 15th. His body was removed somewhere between 9:30 and 10. So somewhere along the line, it is asserted that the Ulke brothers, who lived in the upstairs area in the room directly above the one in which Lincoln died, managed to get in there and take photos. There are 130 known photos of Abraham Lincoln. These are the ones that are confirmed, that are, as they say in the biblical sense, they are canon. They are part of the verified scriptural validity and framework of the photographic evidence of one Abraham Lincoln. This documentary makes the claim that this is possibly the 131st photo. They sort of leave it up to you. This was put out by Dr. Whitney Braun, a PhD. She is an authenticator, investigator, podcaster as well. And she does, in my opinion, a great job with the sufficient amount of drama that a documentary almost demands these days. She had been approached via a single phone call by a caller stating that he had a death photo of Lincoln from the Peterson house on from April 15th. So ultimately, she winds up meeting with the man, and he is able to show that he got it from a relative of Lincoln by the last name of Hanks, by the way, also related to Tom Hanks, which is just kind of a one-off there. But either way, and that she had gotten it from, what was it, her grandmother. There's one more member of the Hanks family who ultimately got it from George Valentine Rutherford, the man who was stationed outside the bedroom guarding Lincoln's body prior to it being removed and taken to the upper northwest wing of the White House for its autopsy. So the documentary goes through the three levels of attempting to authenticate things: the provenance, in other words, the chain of evidence, The forensics behind attempting to identify it, not only as a photograph or an ambrotype from the period, but whether or not it may have actually been Lincoln's facial characteristics. And then the timeline to establish the possibility of whether or not it was possible to take a photo of the president during a period of time that was so traumatic. So for me, the providential time frames are the most interesting. Dr. Braun's able to kind of trace the chain of custody back to the man who was posted there, Mr. Rutherford. But then you have the matter of Henry Olkey himself, the photographer, a man who originally stated that no photos were ever taken inside the Peterson house. And that statement was rendered false about 100 years later when some kid found photos of the bedroom that included the bed and the bloody pillow, and those pictures emerged. It was known that Secretary of War Edward Stanton steadfastly banned, and I mean passionately banned, all photography, and that any photos taken would have been considered illicit and illegal, and possibly subjugating anyone who did so to some sort of tribunal or prosecutorial crucible. So it stands to reason that the Olkey brothers, who were living in the room directly above the bed in which the president would perish, ultimately would be tasked with running errands, hot water, rags, all the stuff that you need during an emergency, and were granted full access through the back doors of the Peterson house on April 14th and 15th with complete access, that they might be able to negotiate a surreptitious access to the room for a quicker photo process, an ambrotype, which was an out-of-date technique from the 1850s, and this is where skeptics step in and say it really wasn't being used. However, if you're trying to take a photo under the gun, under really strict time frames, apparently the ambrotype, which was a technique that the Olkey brothers were aware of and were good at, may have been what they used. So they might have reached back in time for the equivalent of an Instamatic photo, or as close as you could get if they were trying to skirt around Edward Stanton's edict. So as far as this goes, the chain of evidence seems to be really, really solid. The rest is up to the question of, was Lincoln's body ever actually alone between the death and his removal to the White House for forensic examination? Yep, this is a skeptical point, absolutely. You have so many visitors, something like 70 people that managed to make it into that small bedroom throughout the night, that did it ever just completely die off? Would there have ever been a moment that the President of the United States is laying there in a solitary condition? That is probably the biggest thing against the argument that that photo is of Lincoln. And by the way, I want to mention, I have an Instagram page. It's box number seven, the Instagram, at box number seven. I'm going to put the picture of the Lincoln photo up there, along with maybe a couple of other things so you can see it. I might also use it on the front illustration for the podcast as well, just so you have a reference point in case you wanted to look at it, or you've never seen this picture. It is amazing what never, ever gets around. And ultimately, the question is, of course, in the photo, is that Lincoln? Well, Braun makes a compelling case for the idea that the photo is Lincoln, but there's a lot of questions. Facial recognition software places it at a 77% match. Apparently, the company that uses this to confirm facial recognition summations say they look for 85%. So you have that, but at least the claims gain momentum through the providential line. The most convincing thing is the line of the chain of evidence and where that picture came from. Apparently it's on glass, it's in a case from the period, and currently being held, the real photo, in a safe deposit box by a court because there is a legal dispute over ownership. Apparently Mr. Davis, the man who contacted Dr. Braun, he had an ex-wife that sold it, or allegedly sold it, at an auction. And now the people that own it Anyway, he claims, Mr. Davis claims it wasn't supposed to be sold and that it's his, and he's trying to get it back. Anyway, a court has the whole thing held so that there is no way anyone can get their hands on the original right now until those legal matters are resolved. Maybe they've been resolved. I don't know. I'm just going off of the things I was reading to talk about this. But ultimately, there is that. But do I want it to be him? Well, I do. Looking at it, I mean, I struggle. I got to admit, I struggle with the immediate identifiability issues. He's wearing a shirt, and from everything I've read, the contemporaneous accounts say they took Lincoln's shirt off, and there's even contemporaneous accounts of how muscular people observed his torso and his upper chest to be. His hair looks thin, but now, that's the only thing I'm going to say. If you've been shot in the head and people are putting wet towels on your face and combing your hair back, a man with a hairline as receded as his could definitely look thin or out of the way. As we know, men's hair can look really non-existent with age and without sufficient care to accentuate its fullness for presentational purposes. There also appears to be no pillow under his head, and if you look at the bedroom photos, the post-removal photos taken by the Olkey brothers, there is a bloody pillow there and certain blankets and so on. However, in the picture, the right eye, a ruptured eye socket, bulging eye, lip scar along the bottom left side, and a mole on the right lower face are all consistent with known photographs, especially that lip scar, which is one of the most compelling things. The nose, the jaw structure all seems to be really, really consistent. I'm not sure about the ears. I feel like the man in the photo's ears appear diminutive or smaller. However, they are covered somewhat with hair, and that could be an illusion. So what I really want to talk to, now I'm not going to go down a million rabbit holes on the subject about this because the documentary is readily watchable today on Discovery Plus. If you have Discovery Plus, go watch it. It's called Undiscovered, The Lost Lincoln. Absolutely worth the journey. I want to talk about skeptics for a minute. And the critics and skeptics. Now, we need skeptics, just like we need proponents, just like we need people that believe in their thing. If you listen to my Shroud episode, the most enjoyment I got out of this journey was listening to Dr. Spitzer, who is one of the greatest advocates, cheerleaders for the validity of the Shroud of Turin. Don't have to agree with him, but his enthusiasm was intoxicating. Dr. Whitney Braun is the same. I can tell that she's a researcher and that she has scientific principles. However, I can tell, does she want it to be real? Absolutely she does. Is there any crime in that? Absolutely not. Can that kind of thing color your research? Yeah, it absolutely can. But we'll talk about that in a second. Because skeptics, just like proponents, we need them to operate in good faith. But in the last few years, I've noticed a few things about the wholesale behavior of skeptics in every regard. They prefer to operate like Statler and Waldorf, you know, those aged balcony hecklers from The Muppet Show. They take their shots, and maybe it's funny, or it's cool, or it's a mic drop, and then they just kind of walk off and call it a day and don't really offer any counterintelligence to the process. I saw it happen a number of years ago on a subject that I am going to talk about later and has to do with Billy the Kid. Picture a Billy the Kid entered the national conversation 7-8 years ago, maybe. And up to that point, only a small tintype photo existed. The famous Billy the Kid photo that everyone's seen. You know, he stands in his boots and his dark regalia, complete with his rifle and so forth. But then one day this man walks into an antique store in California and ends up with what appears to be an extended photo of Billy the Kid playing croquet. He's wearing kind of a knit sweater. He has the usual hat associated with him. But also appears that some other members of the infamous gang that he ran with, known as the Regulators, are also standing there outside of what appears to be a community hall or a church, possibly in Lincoln County. Now, that level of reactionary opposition to this photo, I remember, was immediate and fierce. I was a subscriber to Old West magazine, and article after article in those magazines took this photo on. And I mean, the reaction was very heavy, and it did feel that the magazine itself had a problem with this photo. But the level of opposition was immediate, as I said, and fierce. The poor guy that presented the photo to the world had no idea that his photo wouldn't be taken in as an exciting possibility, but instead, the historical heavy hitters would come out like white blood cells to drive it out of the conversational body altogether. Now, another photo has emerged recently, also known as the poker photo, and it's very clear that the man in that picture is Billy the Kid, and he's sitting at a poker table looking at his cards. It's very clearly him, and dispute really isn't going to look good on people with this one because of how clear it is. But it seems like it's possible that the dam has broken with regards to skepticism, or at least the way skeptics behave at the outset. And this is the inflection point. I can imagine it must be genuinely difficult to have dedicated your entire research life to a single discipline about a historical subject upon which nobody can eclipse you in terms of time, study, and dedication. And for Pete's sake, if you're playing a game of Trivial Pursuit on your subject, you would destroy people and leave nothing but bodies on the side of the rhetorical road. And then you go through all of this dedication only to have some layman, some non-playing character, trip through the front door of your disciplinary laboratory with an accidental find like this. It's got to be tough, and I'm not even sure I would react in a healthy fashion. But I've seen it in music. The old days of bands. Especially since I grew up with like rock and roll acumen and knowing everything about the bands that I love, the way they played, and many of them played in the Los Angeles area, pay to play. They all played, you know, the Whiskey and the Roxy and, you know, all these places. And they worked, but there was a level of craftsmanship and work and dedication to it. And now, after some of them have achieved their fame and their fortune and their notoriety and the things they always wanted, happy or not, I don't need to go into that. There's a million documentaries about where all that landed for people. But it's got to be tough to go to a music convention like the NAMM show in Los Angeles and see these giant crowds gathered around some 14-year-old that has a YouTube following of 500,000 and you don't even know their name. So the technological age has those downsides. And if I was a Lincoln historian with my own human tendencies toward bias and definite professional jealousy, oh man, I'd love for that Lincoln photo to be a forgery, is all I'm saying. But as an American citizen, I'd love for that photo to be actually him. Macabre or not, yes, it's a picture of a dead guy or a presumptively dead guy. But yeah. I'd love for that photo to be for real, but that's because that runs along my own cumbersome backpack of biases in that regard. But in the end, Dr. Braun has at least presented her case, through her applications of the scientific method. But that's the thing about genuine science. I'm going to make a little bit of a speech here. Genuine science. Science is not a word that means that the person who claims to be a scientist is always right. Science is a series of claims, not the Anthony Fauci, the quote-unquote listen to me intellectual peasant and shut your pie hole school of science. But science believes in placing 100% of its claims on the table for falsifiability and hypothetical counterclaims. And that goes for every claim. Climate change, Darwin's theory of evolution, biblical timelines, and photographic authenticity, and even the endless pendulum, by the way, about eating eggs. Because 1 minute I turn on the media, and eggs are the equivalent of eating some sort of dose of Socratic-level hemlock. And the next day, They're practically a superfood that reverses the aging process and turns me into some modern-day Benjamin Button. Can somebody please get on this and find out what's going on with chicken eggs? Anyway, back to the Lincoln photo. Maybe one day, I can get Dr. Braun on here and talk about that photo since it interests me so. And perhaps she herself has had some new claims or even counterclaims or even her own doubts by this time. I can't really find a record of her talking about it in anything later than the last 3 years. But I'd like to know because, well, it's Lincoln we're talking about, and I can't get enough of Lincoln. That's it. That's my weak little podcast, and this is, well, box number 7.